One time Australian fuckface.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk about death. Specifically, is it okay to celebrate somebody's death, or as atheists, should we always view death as a tragedy?
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Molly Glover.
Why, hello.
And Nick Glover.
I'm spitting up my gum.
It's true.
It's true. He's spitting out his gum. We gave him time. There was this silence, and that wasn't enough time. So now the gum's out.
Gum's
and
out.
Now he's got gum shame.
We've been gum shaming. So speaking of gum shaming, which has nothing to do with this episode, but we are going to talk today about death. And we've talked about death before, but this is a different kind of question. This came up because recently we've had the death of Antonin Scalia and Nancy Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
The three of us being fairly left-leaning. We're not, I want to say, disappointed at their departure from this, at their shuffling off the mortal coil.
I'm going to say I didn't know either one of them, which makes it hard for me to be sad that they died. It's hard for me to be sad someone died I didn't know.
Sure.
Yeah. And I violently disagreed with a lot of their political policies and the way they shaped this country, the two of them. So it's harder to be sad.
Right.
Yeah.
And Molly, specifically, you
yes.
had a bit of an altercation with a mutual friend, with
mm-hmm.
a good friend.
Yep.
The basic thing was, is it okay to express positive sentiment in the wake of somebody dying? Or do we as atheists aware that this is all we get, that there isn't anything
mm-hmm.
more, view every death as a tragedy? And whether it's somebody we care about or we don't,
Or even someone we hate.
Or somebody we hate.
Yep.
Should we view that as a tragedy? And is it wrong? Is it deplorable to get any kind of
Schadenfreude
or from somebody's death? So, you know, I think I remember posting about Scalia's death, and to me, his death. I said I don't rejoice in anybody's death. I know there are people who really cared about Scalia. He had a big family. Apparently, him and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, whom I love, were super good friends and opera buddies.
Sure.
So you know, somebody I respect was a very good friend of Antonin Scalia.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I allowed myself to feel some happiness that he was no longer capable of rendering decisions with
yeah.
which I strongly disagreed.
I said to someone that I'm not celebrating the death of Scalia, but the vacancy of his seat.
Yeah, on the Supreme Court.
On the Supreme Court.
In case
Court.
People don't know from
yeah,
the
yeah,
country.
Right,
yeah,
right.
He was so in case you don't know, just in case, Antonin Scalia was a Supreme Court justice, very conservative. For example, he thought that you should be able to strip search a 10-year-old girl because, you know, privacy and searchability
because,
and,
right. because there's
and terrorism
no right to privacy
and
in the Constitution.
Yeah.
In his opinion.
Views on the Fourth Amendment were controversial.
He was against gay marriage. He was against abortion. He was against
yes.
women's rights to their own bodies.
Yep.
So
he used a lot of religion to legislate a lot of his views.
Yeah. So his position on issues about which we feel very strongly,
which affect me directly. I mean, like straight up, me directly. Like none of us are gay here in this room. So that's, I mean, but like as a woman, and I hate starting sentences that way. But seriously, like he was trying to make decisions that would make my body not sovereign.
Right.
And that's hard for me.
I love starting sentences that way.
As a woman.
As a woman, I just like to say that Scalia's death is a cause for jubilation. But that's just as a woman.
So
as a man, no, I don't know.
As a man,
so
my penis.
Then
hurts.
Nancy Reagan,
yeah.
Wife of former President Ronald Reagan, also died a short while later.
Mm.
Now, Nancy Reagan was 94 years old. She had been outside the public eye for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at the same time, there were many people that were like, ding dong, the bitch is dead, or whatever they said. And there is the question again, as atheists, how do we respond to that? How do we respond to death? Is death always a tragedy?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say. So the friend that I argued with, one of the things his point specifically was, he is the one that said, "Look, we're atheists. We know this is it. And how can we ever celebrate? Like, you're against the death penalty. I'm against the death penalty. How can we ever celebrate somebody's life ending, regardless of what they did or what they stood for?" And I have a really hard time with that, because I think that there are people in this world who have a legitimate reason to celebrate when someone might die. You might be really happy that your rapist is dead because you can sleep now. Or, I don't know, like, you might be really happy that your father died because he made your personal life hell. Or, I mean,
you might be really happy that someone's dead because they were terminally ill and suffering, and that death was a release.
Yes.
I think that
for you and for them.
Anyone that's an advocate of
the right to die
kind of in some way is saying that, like, death is a good thing, or
a human
isn't exclusively bad.
It's a legitimate there is a legitimacy to being able to choose the manner of your departure from this life.
Is death something that should always be avoided?
And something that must always be mourned.
Because if it's a tragedy, then we would want to do everything we could to prevent it, which really does lead us into a lot of, like, Terry Schiavo and
keeping people alive. Dramatic preservation of life. Is that our...
Abortion, for that matter.
Is that where it leads? And so I want to be fair to, because we're not an echo chamber here, and I want to be fair to the perspective of, is it necessarily... should we rejoice at the death of Antonin Scalia? Let's use that as an example to start with. And I feel rejoicing at his death. I don't feel we should rejoice at his death. I don't feel like it's a great thing that somebody is dead, that, you know, people cared about him. It was sudden. It was unexpected. Mm-hmm. There are many people out there who cared about him deeply who are mourning, and that I can't. And so if I see somebody celebrating his death, that makes me uncomfortable.
Okay.
But if I see somebody celebrating the result of that death,
sure,
I feel like that's not, I feel like that's okay.
I was reading kind of about this subject, and one really easy comparison to make for folks that might never be able to see why it's okay to celebrate someone's death. And without going straight to Godwin's law, we can do like a right. 3/4 Godwin and say Bin Laden. And so someone's example in this, using Bin Laden as an example, said if his death had meant an end to Al-Qaeda, which it didn't, or an end to, you know, Bin Ladenism, then his death would have been worth celebrating. But because it was just one man who was a figurehead, who was alone and in hiding and not really a threat, and it didn't bring down Al-Qaeda, and it didn't put an end to Islamic extremism or anything like that, there's not really anything worth celebrating about one guy dying.
That's a good point. I'll offer a few counters, which are, Bin Laden was very much the mastermind behind a lot of what happened with Al-Qaeda. So you removed somebody who was a very good planner and logistical head.
A resource.
You may have saved lives because the people that are left can't do what he did as effectively.
And my understanding is that because he was so on the run, because he was so hidden, that he was kind of removed from any of that in a previous, you know, in a past tense, in you know, if you want to talk about 9/11 or something like that, he may have been very active and very in key to organization and planning, but like by the time they found him and got him, he was, I don't know how active he really could have been.
And there again, I would argue that the tragedy there is, and this is the tragedy to me every time, like, there's somebody who goes in and shoots up a school. And even though I know that realistically the possibilities of understanding that person are virtually none, I want to know what the hell was going on. What made them? What made them be that way? And you know, sure. Bin Laden being dead means we never really get to understand.
That's a fair point.
And we never would have anyway. So it's an unrealistic, but it's that hope that if we didn't kill them, if we took that moment to keep them alive, maybe we would learn something about where the opinions are coming from, where the attitude is coming from that creates people like Bin Laden.
So now with the Antonin Scalia example, this is where I think we've found kind of a unique thing. Because Nancy Reagan... not doing anything anymore. Not a policymaker. Yes, she affected some horrible policies in the 80s. Was pretty much a terrible human being when it came to gay rights and AIDS. Yep. Turned her back on longtime friend Rock Hudson while he was dying from AIDS.
Go so far as to say race and how race was
portrayed
unevenly and terribly impacted by the drug war.
Sure. Yeah. All of that.
Yeah.
She was just, you know, she was just a 94-year-old lady.
Yep.
Antonin Scalia was in a position where the only way he was going to leave the position was by dying.
Yep.
That is where he is. So in that sense, is it possible to separate, like, can you really separate other than through some, you know, semantic, you know, kajiggering to try to make yourself feel better? The idea that you're happy that his seat is vacant, but you're not happy he died. When one can only happen when the other happens.
Hmm. Well,
so the only way his seat is vacant is if he dies. Does that not mean you're happy he died?
Well, that's a good point. And let's use Goodwin's law. Let's go for Godwin's law. And let's talk about Hitler for a second. Not Hitler dying in the bunker. Because when Hitler kills himself in the bunker, World War II is effectively over.
Right.
Hitler's just keeping himself from being captured.
Right.
He doesn't want to be alive to lose. Right. Let's go back to the plot that happens about what... I don't know exactly when it happens, but the movie Valkyrie is about the plot to basically blow up Hitler. That nearly succeeded.
Yeah.
They nearly assassinated Hitler.
Right.
And that would have saved thousands of lives.
Yeah.
That would have saved thousands of lives. Hmm. So, had it happened, and it's a what-if question, but wouldn't it have been appropriate knowing that that action at that time would have saved so many people? And wouldn't it have been appropriate to rejoice in his death because the result of his death was so positive?
And the thing is, people will argue, and this is why with the Supreme Court, or any sort of country where someone has appointed themselves president for life. But in our country, really, it only happens at the Supreme Court, where it's a very unique situation in that the only way that this person leaves power is by dying.
Yeah.
Now someone could argue with you in the Hitler example that even if Hitler had been assassinated, maybe one of his other commanders would have stepped up, war would have continued, same number of people would have died. Who knows? We don't know. There's really no way to know that.
True.
But with Scalia, we know that if he dies, his seat is vacant.
Right.
We know that if he doesn't die, it's not. There is no questioning that.
Yeah. And by the way, because we're going to get corrected, I want to point out, you can choose to step down from the
Supreme Court. But no one does.
Sandra Day O'Connor did.
Okay, but it's very rare. And
it's not very common.
It's people do because they are dying.
Yeah.
Or because they feel that they're unable to do their job because of health. Or
because they want to step down when a president who they agree with will be able to fill their seat. You know, if they want to step down. But I'm saying, like, that's a reason to step down is if you're like, oh, shit, we're facing a presidency of a candidate, you know, that I know will fill my seat with someone who I won't agree with. I would like that, you know.
Sandra Day O'Connor stepped down because she wanted to get her seat filled.
What I'm saying is Antonin Scalia was going to be in that church till he died. So what then I find, and it's frustrating to me because when people are like, how dare you celebrate that man's death? But out of the same side of their mouth are like, I'm glad we have a new Supreme Court justice because that's important for the country, but I'm so upset someone died. And like, okay, I don't know if it's being autistic or if this is something other people experience who are neurotypical, but like, I have a really hard time caring about when people die, when they're past a certain age or when I don't know them. Either one of those. Very hard. Yeah. I can fleetingly say, oh God, that young woman or young man died, that sucks, that's sad. Or if it's someone I know who's lost their friend, I can be sad for my friend. But we all die. That happens.
What's your cutoff?
Everyone dies. My cutoff for age?
Yeah, when do you stop caring?
It's not when do I stop caring. It's more like, when do you think like, oh, well, that's a good life. Okay. That's a good life lived. And I would say that's about 70.
Okay. And Scalia was 79.
And that's a good life lived. That's not, it's young at this point, 70, but 80, 90, that's a good life lived. And it's not like I don't care, but it's more like, I mean, you get to a certain age, you're like, well, I know that my death is approaching. And I just feel like it's hard for me to understand why people feel the need to, like, first of all, mourn, but then judge others for not mourning the death of a stranger. Like, I was sad David Bowie died. He's a genius, and I liked him a lot. And I was sad mostly because, like, he died, and I didn't cry. I was like, man, I felt melancholy.
He wasn't your close personal friend, sucks. David Bowie.
It sucks. No. David Bowie's not going to make more music.
Yeah. And wow, the circumstances were crazy. Like, oh my God, he knew he had cancer for 18 months and recorded a final album as a, like, you know what made me feel like teary was that.
To be released after he died.
Was that he recorded this album the whole time knowing he was going to die, keeping it from everybody. And that was a gift to the fans. That made me feel a little bit
reclaimed. It's amazing.
But like, in no way was I like, and 69 is young as hell. I mean, I'm sorry. 69 is, even these though it's days. Just a little bit before, but like you get past that, you're like, all right, that's now we're getting there. But then 80 or we're getting there and older, but I don't know. Do you guys feel that is there an age for you where you're, I mean, where you're like, well, that's what happens when you're 86.
I think it's less to do with age and more to do with like the quality of a person's life and at health. That age, just because someone can be 69 in incredibly poor health and really have a low quality of life.
Yeah.
And their death could be a release from that. Well, or someone could be 95 and fucking fit as a fiddle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's look at it. My grandmother-in-law, my wife's, Pat's grandmother, is a horrible person, by the way.
Yeah.
She's got...
No, I've heard she's
terrible.
She's
racist.
She's mamaw bad.
Yeah.
But she is now 101, okay? She's got dementia. She doesn't... She barely remembers her daughter. She barely remembers anything.
And beyond that, also, dementia is just a real treat for everyone who has to take care of you because you get angry and violent and you get confused and you lash out.
Unfortunately, she's the nice kind of dementia, but that's good. Still... it's not pleasant.
Yeah.
It's not pleasant for her daughter. It's you know, she is, other than the fact that she has no mental faculties to speak of, healthy as a fucking horse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, that's a life well
her
lived.
Death. No, so
her
healthy,
death is gonna be and I have to believe that her daughter is going to feel relief when she dies because she doesn't have to deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
And is that wrong? And I just don't believe it's wrong.
I just can't. I think, and I know that, you know, as atheists, we often get accused of moral relativism, but I think that moral absolutism is far more frightening than moral relativism.
Yeah.
I think that moral absolutism is how we get things like the Third Reich and how we get things like people who are anti-gay marriage, even if it's their own kids, and who kick their kids out of the house, and who, you know, I think that moral relativism is the true nature of people, to be able to say, well, that thing is bad. Oh, well, in this case, I guess that thing is not as bad as I thought, and then makes you reconsider, you know, life and everything. I mean, I think being put to death by the state is bad. Do I think it's worse when you're innocent? Well, fucking of course it's worse when you're innocent. But like, I mean, that of course I think that people who actually did the thing deserve to be put to death for it. But like, that's not going to happen.
That's an interesting point. I mean, I think like state-sponsored death is definitely different. Anything that's an institution-controlled death is very different than a DNR.
Yeah.
Or someone who is suffering and choosing to die.
Or suicide. I mean, just straight up suicide.
It's an entirely different thing than the government deciding who lives and dies.
Yeah.
And or institutional killing in some capacity. And both of those things are different than people just dying due to circumstance or bad luck or health or whatever in general, which is, you know, what Scalia is. So, I mean, if we really wanted to analyze it and talk about, like, when death can be celebrated or when death isn't necessarily the thing to avoid
or
when death can be celebrated and it's not a tragedy, I think it's easier to look and decide, well, state-sponsored death, I don't think should ever be celebrated. I don't think that, like, a murderer on death row getting the electric chair is necessarily something to jump up and down about, just because even if I saw it fucking happen, the state can get it wrong and does get it wrong frequently enough where I don't think it should happen to anyone, even if that one person does deserve it because of how many that don't deserve it that end up happening. And whereas if it's someone that is seeking death, I think that that is a mournful celebration isn't inappropriate. But then this third kind of death, the death of circumstance, the death of a random incident or health or a heart attack or whatever, I think is a much more gray area than the other two are.
Well, and I want to, the whole prospect of every death is a tragedy. I mean, let's look at that for a second. This idea that as atheists, we have to believe that death is always a tragedy because life is all we have. There is no afterlife. There is no reincarnation. And
I don't think it is. I think we can all agree that it's not.
I feel that is a sadly nihilistic way of dealing with life.
Yeah.
If every time we look at a death, if we see a death in the news and we go, wow, what a tragedy. That is a life ended. It's like, that's where my life is going to be eventually. My life is going to end. And I don't like thinking about that all the time. I like what's happening now. I like I'd like to continue to experience life, but I'm not going to be able to do it forever. And if we
not with that attitude.
Well, yeah, that's true. I'll work on
robot bodies.
I'm gonna immortality is something I'm striving for, but I haven't quite figured it out yet. But the thing is if we start from the perspective of every death is a tragedy, and as atheists, we must view every death as a tragedy, I feel like that doesn't give us a lot of places to go.
It's moral absolutism. That's the thing. And that's why I don't like it. And I think that I feel that I, much like how I don't feel that I have the place or the right to tell someone else how they should be experiencing their life, It's my view on the Black Lives Matter thing. It's my view on when, you know, people want to talk about anything I haven't experienced. I'm not going to say, I think you're fine. You know, like, I
know better than you.
I know better than you. Or I haven't had a problem with that. Therefore, I think that, let's go crazy hypothetical. Let's say my sister and I get kidnapped and the guy murders her. And then somehow, despite all odds, manages to get acquitted. They mishandle the evidence, and it's terrible, and he gets acquitted. There's a mistrial. He goes free. This guy I know. I saw him murder my sister. Saw it happen in my own eyes. No court can't do it. Not going to be vigilante. He dies of a heart attack, and I hear about it. I feel like I get to be happy.
Yeah.
The guy that murdered my sister died. Huzzah! Like, you know what? That's fine. I feel better about that.
And let's take it a step further. Okay, he has a heart attack and dies. That's natural causes. Mm-hmm. What if we said, all right, you find out that the guy died in some really horribly grotesque and painful fashion.
He fell into a mangler.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was alive for hours. He got cooked into 200 pounds of bumblebee tuna.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. That happened to a guy.
And would you still? I would think in those circumstances, you'd not only rejoice at his death, you'd be like, "Wow, that's good. I'm glad he suffered. He deserved to."
How about the man that you know, and this don't have to be a woman, the man that you know assaulted / raped you, that you can't press charges or whatever, got away, escaped, you can't find him. You get word that he died. Your abusive boyfriend or girlfriend, who you were afraid to come forward about, who beat the shit out of you on a regular basis that you never told the cops because you were afraid. You found out, you just found out he or she died. I think you get to feel some relief.
All right. I know. So I'm starting to disagree with some of these because, I think celebrating human suffering is different than celebrating human death.
Okay, that's a good point.
That human suffering is probably something that should always be avoided.
So we shouldn't be happy that he died in Bumblebee, being cooked in 200 pounds right. alive in Bumblebee.
You should be happy that he's dead
even though he beat my sister to death with a pipe.
You should be happy that he's dead because he can't hurt anyone else anymore.
Okay. So that's
necessarily rejoice at his.
So I guess maybe it's a different, let's just call it a different tier of morality about whether or not you get to take joy in suffering.
Because I think Schadenfreude is something that's like, haha, that person I didn't like had to sit in traffic or they didn't get the job they wanted or, you know, something like that is rejoicing in human suffering mm-hmm. to some degree,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like there's a line somewhere, and I don't know if I can articulate where it is, where, like, I don't necessarily wish someone a gruesome and painful death.
It's one of the reasons I had a problem with the death penalty before I decided I was against the death penalty. One of my problems with it was that, to be perfectly frank, I think that some the extreme cases, the Ted Bundys of the world,
sure.
they
too tortured and
get off too easy. That after spending years torturing, like scaring, hurting, taking their time, hurting, raping, and torturing and murdering people, they just get to go to sleep and die.
I had a gigantic problem with Timothy McVeigh, who was the Oklahoma City bomber, who basically, you know, didn't take his appeals and was like, nope, I want the state to kill me. And I was like, that's what he wants.
Don't give it to him.
He doesn't want to rot in jail. I was like, let him rot in jail.
It's not a punishment to kill him.
Yeah.
It's hard to know. I don't think that I'm not a big fan of the phrase "we as atheists need to blank" because other than speak up and be heard, really, but other than but the idea that we as
atheists need to not believe in God.
Just the idea.
Atheists need to get pizza on the way home.
Yeah, we as atheists need to send Molly more money.
We as atheists do need to send Molly more money. That's true.
But I think that when we get into things like we start to fall into the whole problem where people are like Richard Dawkins doesn't speak for me because he's a fucking misogynist. Or I don't want anyone to talk. I don't like the way that this atheist talks. Or
whoa, why are you gesturing at me with that one? Yeah.
You know, just whatever. I think that the idea that we all have to have a shared dogma is kind of what we all rejected in the first fucking place.
It's true.
So,
You know, we got a long way on this, and there's probably a lot longer to go. But we do not have time for that because it is time. For five questions.
Five
questions.
Yeah.
Hey, Molly, do you have five questions?
I do.
From a listener?
I have five answers from William Donahue.
Oh, hi, William.
William Donahue. Yeah.
I think William answered our old questions.
I'm sure he did, but these are new ones, it's exciting.
Question number one, what is the movie that you'll stop and watch anytime it's on or have on the background or whatever you interpret that question to mean?
Buckaroo Banzai.
Hell yes. I gotta say, my favorite, I love Buckaroo Banzai. I loved it since I was a kid when I first saw it. One of my favorite ways to rewatch Buckaroo Banzai is with the Pinky Carruthers. I think I've mentioned this before. The Pinky Carruthers Weird and Random Facts subtitle track. Huh. It's almost done like pop-up video was back in the day. So it's as if a member of the Banzai Brigade, it's as if a member of Buckaroo's crew is watching the true story of Buckaroo Banzai.
And offering facts
about Buckaroo and all his crew and the aliens and all that while the film is watching, it assumes that everything happening is true.
I've never seen it.
Oh my God.
I love
Jeff Goldblum as the brain surgeon Jewish cowboy. Come on.
I love pop up videos, and that kind of thing. Just because it combines, you know, music videos, which I grew up on, with trivia.
Yeah,
so,
right.
It's like the best fucking thing ever.
And what's better than fictional trivia? Like that's
fictional trivia is pretty great.
It's like, have you ever heard the commentary track for This Is Spinal Tap, where the actors are playing Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. I need to watch that. Yeah.
They're
God,
so
I love that
pissed
movie.
Off because they feel like they've been so misrepresented by this film.
If you haven't watched For Your Consideration recently, you should watch it again. It's,
oh, yeah?
It is, it's
I've seen it.
Way
yeah.
better than you remember, at least for me. I love all those movies, but like yeah. that was one of those ones I was like, oh, that was pretty good. It's so much funnier than I remember. It's, yeah.
Awesome.
Anyway.
Question number two. What is your geekiest or most prized possession?
A copy of The Best of All Possible Worlds. Spider Robinson put together an anthology of some of his favorite short stories and asked the authors of those stories to pick one of their favorites. My copy was signed by both Spider and Genie at a Capricorn where they were both a guest of honor.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. That is a super cool thing.
That's a cool thing. Okay, question number three. What supernatural or mythical being do you wish was real?
Shinto Kami. Yes, all of them.
Ghosts.
Rational me may be an atheist, but emotional 5-year-old me is an unreconstructed animist.
Yeah.
I'd like all the bits of the world that aren't us to have the chance to tap us on the shoulder and ask us just what is it we think we're doing.
Yeah.
I like, yeah, if there was ever, if I was going to pick a religion, I'd pick one of the ones that has like multiple gods, especially Shinto or paganism. Like
animism's neat.
Yeah.
I dig that.
It's so much more interesting. Christianity, when you really boil it down, is boring as fuck.
Catholicism's close because it's the pagan Christianity.
And all the angels.
All the saints and the minor saints. But
demons.
Really, that's just gods. That's just little gods, you know.
Gods. Yeah.
Godlings.
Question number four. See, religion is gone. What is the biggest problem that humanity now faces?
Our raw perceptual and cognitive skills are crappy. We have practices that improve the predictive power of those skills, but many people shun those practices because they might change their beliefs, and by extension, their fundamental sense of selves. We'll need a better understanding of how our brains work and how human social groups work to crack this one.
Hmm.
Now, that's great. Cognitive dissonance is not something that, you know, is born out of religion. It's a thing people have all the time. It's that thing that, you know, you hear about a guy who loses his job but still goes to, like, into the city every day to pretend he's going to work so his wife doesn't find out or whatever. And like,
people are bad at understanding big math or statistics. And so when you say, like, people that are like, health insurance is a scam, but then they buy lottery tickets.
Yep. Or people who think that they can cheat on their spouses for, like, years and years and never be found out. That's a cognitive dissonance, man.
That's Tim.
Yeah. Or like, no, but like the double life thing. Like that's, I mean, that kind of thing that like you can, or that you can get away with something.
The whole like sociopathic, like I'm above the rules and things don't apply to me, but they apply to everyone else.
Sure, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So you'll judge other people for doing what you do because to you it's, what you're doing is completely justified for whatever reason you have in your head. You don't understand why it's the same thing. Question number five, what's your favorite quote?
All right. I will put, he has an addendum on this that says it needs to be delivered in the right tones, but I didn't look at the YouTube thing, so I'm going to just do this. Having just read my first Terry Pratchett Discworld book, I believe I've nailed this.
Okay.
All right. You need to believe in things that aren't true. How else can they become? Death, discussing belief with his granddaughter. From Hogfather, Terry Pratchett, 1996. I know, Death talks in all caps, so I always imagine his voice being very booming and imperative, but maybe it's not meant to be that way. So we'll post the YouTube link.
I always imagine it as like flat and monotone. And
you need to believe in things that aren't true. How else can they become?
Not robotic, different than that. You need to believe in things that aren't true. How else do they become?
Mm-hmm.
Like monotone and, you know, it doesn't, not robotic.
This is why books are magic, because they're different to all of us.
Now do it like a fancy lady.
You need to believe in things that aren't true.
One must believe in things that are not true. How else would they become?
Yeah. Okay, now Tim, do it in an Irish accent.
Oh boy.
What? All right, you gotta need to believe in things that aren't true, because how else could they become?
I'm gonna go, you need to believe in things that aren't true. How else can they become?
Boy.
Can we be, let's.
That's like, you heard it here first, Terry Pratchett's Death speaks with a Jamaican accent.
Alright, so before we go, I need to remind you of a few things. The weekend after this episode goes up is Die Laughing. We have two live episodes. The first episode...
Two episodes.
First episode is at 4 o'clock. We have Melissa Karischer and Fess Works. They will have been newly married by us and a bunch of other people in an improvised wedding ceremony.
Gay.
No, the other one.
That's straight.
That's the one.
That's at 3:30. It is going to be streaming on the web, so if you're not local, it's going to be weird. You should check it out. And then we're going to do a live podcast with him at 4 o'clock. And then at 9, we'll do another live podcast, this time with Ariel Leaf, who's a local theater producer, actress. Maven. Theater maven.
Yeah.
Ariel
Maven's
Leaf.
A word.
Yeah.
I like that
maven
one.
Maven is a big-ass
word.
Gets
used a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And during that weekend and leading up to, you can donate now, all right? Mm-hmm. We are doing a fundraiser for Die Laughing.
He means Fearless Comedy Productions, not Geeks Without God.
Well, the Geeks Without God is helping them raise money by doing a challenge, which is $1,000 challenge. If we can raise $1,000 for Fearless Comedy Productions, we will go on a ghost hunting tour.
Yes, you have to make sure that when you make your donations, you put something in the comment or whatever that says it's for Geeks Without God.
For the Geeks
because
Without
they
God
need to
God
make
challenge.
Sure they're marking it for us. Because otherwise, they'll just be like, "Yay, money for Fearless,"
not,
and it'll just
disappear. Not that the money goes to us, but you have to flag it so that it goes to the right challenge.
So they can mark it right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, otherwise we aren't going
to How would they know?
Yeah. Otherwise.
How would they know? They're not omniscient. No one is.
So, this is your opportunity to punish us the way we were punished by going to Grace Megachurch
and joining
Scientology. Nick is still being punished for that choice.
You know, it's funny. I got an email from them asking to confirm my address because I haven't been responding to the shitloads of Scientology mail.
It's so weird.
I also got invited to their New
L. Ron
Year's
Hubbard's,
dinner and L. Ron Hubbard's birthday dinner at Scientology.
Did you know that he's still celebrating birthdays despite his death? Miracle.
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 Miracle. So then, of course, the other big thing we've got coming up is a live show for our 200th episode. We are going to be recording with Barb Abney, local radio personality and international music star Jeremy Messersmith. Which Molly's going to turn into a quivering mass of not being able
to I'm going to try to be so cool, you guys.
Oh, God, that makes it worse.
And we've got some really cool stuff coming up that we're going to announce at that 200th episode. So, seriously, a lot of cool shit going down here at Geeks Without God Mothership. So, we hope that you enjoyed the show. We love that you are commenting on some of our episodes. Please keep that up. I bet this episode made you yell all sorts of things at us because you thought we were wrong. Feel free to share that that wrongness that you felt about.
I'd super be interested in hearing the opinion or contradictions to what we've said from anyone who has background as like an ethicist or like a background in rhetoric or something like that, because it'd be nice to know like if we're intellectually consistent.
So with that, rate us on iTunes, rate us on Stitcher. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
I am the ghost of Antonin Scalia.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
I just want to point out, they use the plural of companies, not the possessive.
Oh.